Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky visited Copenhagen and addressed Parliament, where he thanked the Danish government for donating F-16s.
We become stronger, all of us, together with you. Thank you.
We'll have that plus an analysis of what the American-made jets may bring to the battlefield. And later in the program, the number of foreign businesses that have left Russia during nearly 18 months of war.
There has been an extraordinary stampede of unparalleled multinational corporate exits never before seen in world history.
Today is Monday, August 21st. From the Voice of America, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. On Sunday, the Netherlands and Denmark announced that they were giving fighter jets to Ukraine. From the Associated Press, Mimi Montgomery starts us off.
At a news conference with Ukraine's President Zelensky, Dutch Prime Minister Mark Rutte confirms the Netherlands, along with Denmark, will give F-16 warplanes to Ukraine. The planes will be delivered once unspecified conditions are met.
In the meantime, we have to work on the infrastructure to make sure that a landing and takeoff of the planes can take place in Ukraine in a safe way, because the F-16s are very sensitive planes, so we have to make sure that all the infrastructural things have been prepared. And of course, the whole authorization process will also take place in the meantime.
During the same news conference, Zelensky says the leaders agree on a number of planes, possibly more than 40 from the Netherlands. He goes on to thank his counterpart, saying the F-16s will bring new energy to his troops and deliver results for Ukraine and Europe. I'm Mimi Montgomery.
Now, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky thanked Denmark for military support to his country in a speech that he delivered to Parliament in Copenhagen, taking place on Monday.
Now, Russian evil strikes with pain and death at Ukrainian cities and villages, but they openly say that Ukraine is not enough. Later, after our country, they want to carry the suffering further to Europe and to the world. And I'm sure you hear it. You hear it from Moscow. All of Russia's neighbors are under threat if Ukraine does not prevail. International law will not be resuscitated. Democracies of the world, each of them can become a target, either for missiles or for mercenaries or for destabilization, and I'm sure you can feel it. But Ukraine will prevail. When Putin ordered this invasion, he only believed in the lens of his armed vehicles column. In power of explosions of Russian missiles, he believed that cruelty is capable of rewriting the history of an entire continent, erasing this history, pushing it back a century. Yes. To crush everything that makes our continent and our countries peaceful. He believed only in force. In force without humanity. He trusted violence, and that is why he is weaker. We believe in something completely different, and that is why we become stronger, all of us, together with you. Thank you.
Russia has condemned the decision by both Denmark and the Netherlands to donate F-16 fighter jets to Ukraine, saying that the move would escalate the conflict. And now that there are plans and a possible date for the arrival of the F-16s, I'd like to revisit a June conversation that my colleague Steve Karish had with Bryn Tannehill of the RAND Corporation about the impact that she sees the aircraft potentially having in the conflict.
And so in your recent article, you're saying that the F-16s are going to be a big help, but they're also going to be a lot of work for Ukraine. Can you tell us what are the challenges that are going to come to Ukraine once they get F-16s?
So some of the big challenges are, first, employment, right? You've got to employ them the way that they were intended within kind of a Western combined arms NATO mindset. The F-16s were designed to operate within NATO air forces, right? If you try and operate these exactly the way you operated the old MiG-29s, you're not going to get the most out of them. And you're going to have issues.
Well, what does that mean? What does that mean? Doesn't a pilot just hop in and fly and shoot what they need to shoot?
It's more complicated than that. You have some of it is digital connection between aircraft. Some of it is how you think about employing it. Some of it is that the aircraft are radically different in terms of their capabilities. So an example I would give is the older MiG-29 has these flaps that are on the air intakes. That what it does is it allows it to draw air into the engines from above the fuselage, and that allows them to do takeoffs and landings from highways without worrying about ingesting rocks and twigs and stuff and damaging the engine, right? The F-16 has its air intake mounted underneath the cockpit, essentially, right next to the runway. And it doesn't have a similar system that allows it to block out air from underneath the aircraft and pull in air from above, meaning it's much more vulnerable to ingesting debris. And it's only got one engine, vice two engines. We already talked about training pilots. Training pilots, we figured out, is going to take about 4 months to give them just the information they need to fight the kind of fight that they're expecting. The audience needs to understand is that this is not going to allow Ukraine to gain air dominance.
The F-16s.
And that's with the F-16s or air superiority or even possibly air parity. The problem with these F-16s is that they were designed as a lightweight multi-role fighter. They were not designed as an air superiority fighter. The Russians have aircraft that are much larger with giant, powerful radars that can put an ungodly amount of radiation in the air. And these radars aren't old. The radars that they're using are good APG-66s, but they're still old and they still don't get that much power because the F-16 is small and light, right? It doesn't have that much energy that it could put out in terms of radio waves. It also, the Russians have things like the MiG-31 and the Sukhoi-35 that have radars that can see further that are much more modern. They also have missiles like the R-37 that are faster and have much longer range, which means that in general, Russian... Okay, and one other thing is that the Russians also have AWACS aircraft to help things see from very far away. So in general, the Russians are going to be able to see Ukrainian F-16s before their F-16s can see the Russians. And they're going to be able to shoot at the Ukrainian aircraft before the Ukrainian aircraft can shoot back, which gives the Russian aircraft a distinct advantage in air-to-air, you know, beyond visual range combat.
So they've got this new airplane. It's a lot more complicated. It has some extra requirements that the Ukrainians are going to have to fulfill. Overall, is it worth them having? Is it a good thing for them?
In the long run, yes, it's very much a good thing. One thing we didn't talk about is sustainability, which is you're going to need parts and maintenance for the aircraft and have access to the manufacturers who would help maintain the aircraft and maintain a supply of spares. Long term, Ukraine wants to integrate with NATO. And part of integrating with NATO is integrating with NATO supply systems, integrating with NATO manufacturers, integrating with NATO data networks, tactics, weapon systems that you hang off of the aircraft. And all of this furthers Ukraine's ability to be integrated into NATO down the line.
Bryn Tannehill is a former naval aviator and a senior technical analyst at the nonprofit, nonpartisan RAND Corporation. Bryn, thank you so much for your time today. I appreciate your time and your analysis.
Thank you very much for having me on. I appreciate it.
You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Steve Miller. As Ukrainian forces continue their counteroffensive in the south, Russian forces are pummeling the city of Kupiansk in the northeast. VOA's Heather Murdoch reports from a city under attack as families evacuate and soldiers prepare for battle.
The city in eastern Ukraine is becoming more dangerous by the day, with Russian forces attacking from a distance of about 5 kilometers. It is widely believed that Russia wants to recapture Kupiansk, and volunteers are evacuating families from frontline areas and nearby villages. Russia occupied the city for 7 months before Ukraine took control last September. Locals evacuating the area say they survived occupation, often without electricity, heat, or the internet. But now they cannot take it anymore. In an evacuation bus about to head out of town, Lydia weeps as she tells us that she knows she may never go home again. But at a church in the center of town, some residents say they will stay put until their homes fall down around them. About 2 hours after we visit the church, bombs crash into a residential area about 100 meters away. 10 people are taken to a hospital. Soldiers say the city is strategic because of its railway hub, and they are preparing for a tough battle ahead. We are told in the coming weeks that these evacuations, now going on daily, could become mandatory. Reporting from Kupiansk, Ukraine, Heather Murdoch, VOA News.
And on Monday, I also caught up with Heather over WhatsApp. Heather, you went back to Kupiansk on Monday morning, after the city was attacked. What did you see, and really, what did you experience in such a short turnaround trip?
It feels like Kupiansk is a city that's sort of on the edge of disaster. People are evacuating, and other people who have long said they were going to stay, people who have lived through 7 months of occupation and also through this summer of violence, are now finally saying enough because the recent attacks have become too much. So we met people who stayed through so much who today were saying, finally, we're leaving. We went to a post office where there was a surprising amount of traffic, considering that every few seconds we could hear a bomb either going out of the city or into the city. People were coming in, mailing their things to their relatives, like electronics, valuables, even food, because while they're planning to evacuate, they're afraid their homes are going to be destroyed and their possessions are going to be gone before they can get out of the city. We also met some people. We met some people at a kitchen that was cooking food for people who are stuck in the front lines, mostly older people or infirmed people who can't travel. But it was quite heartbreaking. There was one woman who was insisting that she has to stay because she loves her city. And while she's talking about this, you can hear the bombs getting closer.
You know, Heather, you know, you've mentioned, you visit around Ukraine, you've traveled throughout this entire conflict, and time and time again, there's a story of people who are either old or infirm who can't leave or who have such an attachment to their city that they want to remain. But I want to go back to what you said, Daniel. While you were there visiting the post office, visiting the kitchen, you could hear the projectiles, the munitions going into and out of the city. How close were these, explosions that you were hearing?
Well, fortunately today, everything we heard was at least several kilometers away from us. So it's loud enough that you can hear, but also loud enough that you can speak, quiet enough that you can speak over. So it's like booms and bangs. Yesterday, we heard some missiles that were closer and, including the, specific sounds, like a whistle indicates that something's coming towards you and it's not that far away. In the post office itself, we asked if they're safe there, and they just pointed out their windows. They're like, look, we only have one little square of window that still exists. Everything else has been shattered. They said usually the school nearby is bombed, and it frequently bombs, but occasionally they miss. And hits near the post office. So it's so often that one of the volunteers I've spoken to says, she said, I thought I could never get used to this, but now when I'm going to work, on my way, if I hear shelling, I drop to the ground. And then when it's gone over, I get up and continue on my way to work.
Wow. That's, you know, we've heard that from residents in Kyiv where they become accustomed to it. It's just, as they have put it, the new normal. VOA's Heather Murdock is currently reporting from inside Ukraine, traveling throughout the country, speaking to those directly affected by the conflict. Heather is currently in the city of Kharkiv. Heather, thank you very much for your time, and please be safe.
Thanks. Nice talking to you.
And for more information on the recent updates about the conflict and reaction to Zelensky's trip abroad, I spoke with Anna Chernikova in Kyiv.
Well, President Zelensky had another quite a trip over the weekend, and we can clearly see that, the reason why he had this trip to the Netherlands, to the Denmark, he actually inspected some F-16 jets that will be delivered to Ukraine. According to Ukrainian officials from the Air Force, it should be done by the end of this year. We already have also confirmation from Ukrainian officials that Ukrainian pilots have started their training. So definitely it was a great trip, as was announced during these trips in the Netherlands. The Netherlands will provide Ukraine with 42 F-16 jets, while Denmark will join and provide another 19 jets. Also, Ukrainian pilots are currently at training, and some of them are pilots who are quite fresh. So they will get, they just graduated from their studies, and they will get this new experience with F-16 straight away. And some pilots who are currently at the training, they already have air combat experience from before, and they're basically getting this new training, new experience and training with F-16, having already been in the battles and knowing how it is.
And one last question, Anna, on a more somber note, can you bring us up to date on the events that transpired in Chernihiv?
Yeah, it was quite a tragic Saturday for Ukraine, particularly for the city of Chernihiv, which is just a couple of hours away by car from the city of Kyiv, from the capital. This city was suffering occupation last year by Russian forces, and now it's another, and yet it's the biggest, it was the biggest shelling and the most tragic shelling from the beginning of full-scale invasion. So what happened is that Russian forces attacked the city of Chernihiv with ballistic missile. This ballistic missile hit the drama theater in this very city center of Chernihiv. Later on, it was confirmed that during this attack, a drone exhibition was taking place in the theater. So different drone representatives from the defense industry and particularly drones were present in that place, and it was certain exhibition going on. It was not it was announced, but not it was not openly announced, but still the announcement was taking place. So now inside the country it is discussed whether it was supposed to be announced or not, in order to avoid such attacks in the future. But unfortunately, most of people who got injured were those who were just walking around in the city center during this weekend, during Saturday, and it was also big religious holiday on Saturday in Ukraine. So a lot of people were outside. What we know from the official as rescue operation has already been finished, 156 people got injured, and these injuries are of different level, and some people remain in the hospital with very serious injuries. 7 people unfortunately died, including 1 child. And this attack caused 66 residential building to be damaged, again of different level of damages. 10 administrative buildings damaged, and 67 vehicles were also either damaged or destroyed.
Thank you for that, Anna. And as developments continue to unfold, we'll be sure to check back in with you. Anna Chernikova reports for us from Kyiv, Ukraine. Anna, it's great to have you back, and thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you, Steve.
Ukrainian officials say that Kyiv is considering using its newly tested wartime Black Sea export corridor that hugs the western Black Sea coast near Romania and Bulgaria for grain shipments. That after the first successful evacuation of a vessel along the route last week. And finally, last week we also spoke about the war's impact on the Russian ruble. And today we continue the conversation by focusing on foreign companies and the prospects of doing business in Russia. Since the early days of the war, several international companies have closed up shop and left. VOA Ukrainian service reporter Oksana Bedratenko spoke via Zoom with Jeffrey Sonnefield, Senior Associate Dean for Leadership Studies and Professor of Management at Yale University. He's also the founder and president of the Chief Executive Leadership Institute.
You've been researching international companies who are leaving Russia for some time. What developments do you see in this area now?
Well, something which surprises us is that there has been an extraordinary stampede of unparalleled multinational corporate exits never before seen in world history. With companies standing up for their global values, either out of enlightened self-interest or a sense of humanitarian compassion, that they have pulled out of over 1,100 companies that have completely exited. And that's been posted. We have it up every single night. We keep updating it for people free of charge to go to our site, Yale Russia List, and it'll bring anybody there to take a look at what's there. That is roughly 6 times the prior high watermark, the prior milestone with the exit from South Africa in 1988, that I never got to know Nelson Mandela, but did get to know Bishop Desmond Tutu, who said that the private sector pullouts were just as important, if not almost more important, than the governmental sanctions. When people say, oh, these economic blockades never work, well, they often are underpowered if it's only the governmental sanctions, because the villainous leaders, in that case, P.W. Botha in South Africa, and of course, Putin today in Russia, as villains, they drape themselves as victims and drape themselves in the flag of their respective patriotism, saying, oh, they're international diplomats that are envious of our resources. But that doesn't work, as we saw in South Africa and we see in many other parts of the world. When individual corporations, hundreds of them, pull out, then it's not for that reason. In fact, they make what seem to be willing to make sacrifices to pull out. As it turns out, every company has been richly rewarded in the financial markets for reducing operational risk, reducing financial risk, and reducing reputation risk. So doing good was not opposite, at the expense of doing well. They reinforce each other. But the last thing I have to mention is there are about 400 major multinationals that have stayed in Russia. And so that's sort of a lingering challenge. None of them are doing very well being in Russia. It's bewildering as to why they stay.
That was Jeffrey Sonnefield, Senior Associate Dean for Leadership Studies and Professor of Management at Yale University, speaking with my colleague in the Ukrainian service, Oksana Bedratenko. We'll have more of their conversation on tomorrow's program. And with that, that's going to do it for us today. Be sure to stay up to date with our continuing coverage, not only on Ukraine, but on news and events from around the world. You can do so 24 hours a day at voanews.com, as well as on our social media platforms. Just be sure to follow VOA News. On behalf of everyone at VOA, we thank you very much for listening. And until next time, I'm VOA's Steve Miller. Be well, be safe, and good night.
This is the voice of America. Washington, D.C.